We're now on Radio Board, the Saturday play, Emile and the Detectives, a comic classic since 1931. Eric Kessner's story of the country boy, Emile Tischbein, and his adventures in Berlin has been adapted for radio by Katie Himes.
Ask Aunt Martha to lend you a clothes hanger this evening so you can hang your suit up. Make sure you give it a good brush first.
Who do you think invented Sunday suits?
I've no idea.
Well, I knew where he lived. I'd go round to his house and shoot him.
Oh, poor man.
Why poor man?
Oh, fancy being shot for inventing a suit.
He'll only be getting what he deserves.
Is your dinner all right?
It's delicious.
Your suitcase is ready and packed, and I've wrapped up the flowers for Aunt Martha. I'll give you the money for Grandma after we've eaten.
All right.
Uncle Robert said he might take you to a museum on Sunday, so don't forget to say thank you.
After dinner, they went together into the front room, where Mrs. Tischbein took a tin box out of a cupboard and counted the money in it.
Who did I have yesterday afternoon?
Miss Thomas and Mrs. Homburg.
Yes, that's what I thought. But in that case, the money's 8 marks short.
The gas man called this morning.
Oh, yes, of course. So, Emile.
Yes?
Here are 140 marks, 100 Reichsmark note and 2 20s. Give 120 to Grandma and say I hope she isn't cross because I haven't sent money lately. And give her a kiss from me.
OK.
The other 20 is for you. You'll need 10 marks for your return fare, so you must keep that. Offer to pay your share if you have any meals out and keep a few marks in your pocket in case anything turns up. I'll put the notes in the envelope. Don't lose it.
Don't worry. I'll guard it with my life.
Where had you better put it?
In my jacket, in the inside pocket.
Well, don't go telling people in the train that you have all this money on you.
As if I would.
You might be thinking that this is a lot of fuss to make about 140 marks. Well, perhaps it is, and people who earn 2,000 marks a month certainly wouldn't think twice about spending that amount. But Emil's father was dead. And Mrs. Tischbein worked hard to get the things for him that other boys had. She had turned one of their rooms into a hairdresser's and spent her days trimming, washing and setting. Emile would have felt bad if he hadn't done his best at his lessons, but being good did not come easily to him. He was not one of those unnaturally angelic children who seemed to have been born old. But at the end of every term, when he was top of the class, his mother was always so thrilled that it was all worth it. Emile and his mother were just getting out of the tram at Neustadt station when they heard a deep voice behind them.
Where are you off to, Switzerland?
Oh, no, Sergeant. Emile is going to Berlin to stay with relatives.
Berlin, eh? Aren't you lucky?
Yes, sir.
Well, I wish you a very pleasant trip, Emile.
Thank you, sir.
Emile had a guilty conscience where Sergeant Jeschko was concerned, and felt quite sick at the sound of his voice. In the marketplace in Neustadt stood a statue of the Grand Duke Charles. As a joke, his friends had lifted him up to chalk a red nose and black moustache onto the statue's face. He was almost finished when Sergeant Jeschke appeared, and although they had all raced off, they were afraid he had recognised them. Emil quite expected to hear the sergeant call after him, "Hands up, Emil, you're under arrest." Nothing happened. But, of course, the sergeant could just as easily be waiting until Emil came home again.
It's Friedrichstrasse station you want, remember, and you're due there at 6:17. The station before yours is the Zoological Gardens. Be sure you don't get out there.
You needn't worry so much, you know.
I'll worry a great deal until you've arrived safely. Now, don't throw your rubbish on the floor of the carriage either, and for heaven's sake, don't lose that money.
It's safe inside my jacket.
Good. All right, then.
Don't work too hard while
all
I'm
aboard,
away.
All aboard, please! All aboard!
You'd better get on the train.
Yes, all right.
Be careful you don't leave anything behind, and don't sit on the flowers.
I won't.
Remember, it's the Friedrichstrasse station.
I know.
Grandma will be waiting by the flower stall.
Yes, you told me. You told me
all
about 100 times.
All aboard!
Be nice to your cousin and write to me.
You have to write to me too.
Of course I will.
We're moving. Goodbye, Mother.
Goodbye, Emile.
Mrs. Tischbein waved till the train was out of sight, then turned and walked slowly home. dabbing her eyes with her handkerchief.
Excuse me, but is this seat taken?
Now that is nice. Isn't that nice?
It certainly is.
Boys aren't often as polite as that nowadays.
They certainly aren't.
Things were very different when we were young.
Is this seat taken?
No, no, sweetheart. You sit down. Make yourself comfortable.
Thank you.
Tell me, young man.
Yes?
Has Mr. Kurzhal still got the draper's shop in Neustadt?
Oh, yes. Do you know him?
Indeed, I do.
He's just bought the land the shop stands on.
Has he indeed? Well, you tell him that Mrs. Jakob from Grossgrünau was asking after him. Will you do that for me?
But I'm on my way to Berlin now.
That's all right. You can wait till you get home.
The woman had taken her left shoe off because it pinched her feet, and now she was wiggling her toes to ease them. Next to her sat the man who wheezed at every breath, and next to him was a woman crocheting a shawl. In the window seat was another man in a bowler hat, reading a newspaper. Now the man lowered his paper and brought a slab of chocolate out of his pocket.
Young man, would you like some of this?
Oh, yes, please. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Emil Chisbein's my name.
Glad to make your acquaintance. My name is Grundeis.
Pleased to meet you, Mr. Grundeis.
So you're going to Berlin, are you?
Yes. My grandmother's coming to meet me. She'll be waiting at the flower stall at Friedrichstrasse station.
Have you been to Berlin before?
No, never.
You're in for some surprises, then.
I know it'll be quite different from what I'm used to.
Oh, I shouldn't say so.
Ever seen a building 100 stories high?
No, sir.
Well, you will in Berlin. Did you know that the buildings are so tall that they've had to fasten the roofs to the sky so that they won't blow away? And there's another thing I expect you didn't know. If you're in a terrible hurry to get somewhere, then you can go to the nearest post office and they'll pack you in a box and you can be posted yourself.
What on earth are you talking about?
I beg your pardon?
Why are you filling this boy's head with nonsense?
I'm sorry, but I won't be spoken to like that by you or by anybody else.
Oh, look!
What?
I think we're nearly at the next station.
The wheezy man, the woman with the crochet, and Mrs. Jakob all got out at the next station. Mrs. Jakob nearly got left behind because she had great difficulty in getting her shoe on again.
Remember me to Mr. Kurzhal?
After that, he and the man in the bowler hat were left alone in the carriage, and Emil began to feel rather anxious. There was something strange about this man. Emil would have liked to have checked his money again, but he did not care to risk it alone with Mr. Grundeis. So as soon as the train moved off, he went into the adjoining toilet and took the envelope out of his pocket. The money was still there, and he counted it. Then he wondered what to do to make it safer, and he had a good idea. He remembered that he had a pin in the lapel of his jacket. He took it out and stuck it right through the envelope and the three notes and pinned them to the pocket through the lining of his jacket. In the carriage, Mr. Grundeis appeared to be asleep. Emil wished that someone would get into the compartment so that he would not have to be alone with him, but no one did, although the train stopped at several stations. Eventually, Emil found himself nodding off, and although he pinched himself to try and stay awake, it was no use. While he slept, Emil dreamed that he was being chased by Sergeant Jeschke, but he managed to escape to a glass windmill, where he found his mother washing Mrs. Homburg's hair. And his mother said to him,
"And what about the money? Is it still in your pocket?"
He woke up just as the train was pulling out of the station and found himself on the floor, feeling very frightened. The man in the bowler hat was gone. And for some reason, Emil's heart was beating like a sledgehammer. He put his hand slowly to his jacket and found that the pocket was indeed empty. Emil thought of pulling the emergency cord, but then the guard would come along and he'd ask,
"What's the matter then?"
"My money's been stolen."
"Well, you'll have to take better care of it next time, won't you? I'll need your name and address, young man. We shall have to write to your mother about improper use of the emergency cord. There's a 100 mark fine, you know, and she'll have to pay up quick or the fine will increase."
He decided he would go and find the guard at the next station But then he remembered Sergeant Yeshka. If the police became involved, then the sergeant would be sure to hear about it and bring up the matter of the statue.
Ah,
he'd say.
I have my suspicions about that boy Tischbein. In my experience, anyone capable of defacing a monument is likely to be a liar too. Don't waste your time looking for a thief. If there ever was one, it was probably Tischbein himself. I advise you to arrest him at once.
The train was slowing down, and Emil could see the name of the station written up in large letters, Zoological Gardens. The train stopped, and doors flew open. Suddenly, in the stream of departing passengers, Emil saw a bowler hat. Had Mr. Grundy simply skipped out of one compartment and into another while the train stopped and Emil slept? Without another thought, Emil grabbed his things and jumped off the train.
Sorry!
Look where you're going, will you?
Excuse me! Sorry! Excuse me! Thank you! Sorry!
The important thing was not to lose sight of Mr. Grundyce now he had found him. A number 177 tram made up of two cars drew up opposite the station and Mr. Grundyce got into the front car. Emil reached the tram just as it was about to start up again. He had to push his suitcase on first and then scramble up after it. What next? He wondered. So this was Berlin. Emil wished he had time to stop and look at it. The man who had his money was sitting there in the front part of the tram and might get out at any minute and disappear into the crowd. And all this time, his grandmother and cousin Pony must be waiting for him by the flower stall at Friedrichstrasse station. What would she say if she knew that her grandson was travelling round Berlin on a number 177 tram alone and in such trouble?
Yes, please. Yes, please. Thank you.
Suddenly, Emil realized he had no money. He wondered if any of the other passengers would lend him the money, but they were all deeply engrossed in their own concerns. One reading a newspaper, two others discussing a big bank robbery.
Thousands of marks gone, just like that.
You know, no one's actually obliged to tell the bank what they deposit in those safes.
Really?
First, please.
To Nicholas Square, please, conductor.
Thank you. Hey, what about you, young man?
Please, I've lost my money.
Do you know how many times I hear that in one day?
Yes, sir. I mean, no, sir. I don't.
How far are you going?
I don't know yet.
What do you mean you don't know?
It's difficult to explain.
Is it really?
You won't believe me if I tried.
Well, you can just get out of the next stop, all right?
I can't do that. I can't possibly do that. Please let me stay on just for a bit longer.
When I tell you to get off, you get off, all right?
Oh, here, give the boy a ticket.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much.
It was the man who had been reading his newspaper.
Thank you very much, sir.
That's okay.
Can you please give me your address?
What for?
So that I can pay you back. I'm staying in Berlin for a week, so I could bring it round to you. My name's Emil Tischbein. I come from Neustadt.
Oh, don't worry about it. The fare is paid. That's all that matters. Do you want any more money?
Oh, no. Thank you.
The man went back to his newspaper, and the tram moved on. And stopped and went on again. A stranger had paid his fare but had gone on reading again, and Emil felt very small in that big city.
Troutenhouse Street!
Mr. Grundyce got off the tram at the first stop into Troutenhouse Street. Emil immediately picked up his suitcase and a bunch of flowers, murmured a thank you to the man who paid his fare, and jumped out of the rear car. Then he watched as Mr. Grundyce crossed over the road and sat down outside a cafe. Emil's next move had to be cautious, like a real detective following a suspect. He glanced about quickly and noticed a newspaper stand on a street corner. This would give him exactly the sort of cover that he needed. Grundyce ordered himself a coffee and lit a cigarette and appeared very pleased with himself. Emil was disgusted that a thief could have all the fun while the person who had been robbed had to hang about behind a newspaper stand. But these thoughts were suddenly interrupted by a motor horn honking loudly just behind him. The sound made Emil jump, but when he looked around, there was only a body standing there.
Shh, be quiet with that thing.
What? What's wrong? It was a joke. You nearly jumped out of your skin.
Stop making that noise. Listen, you idiot.
Don't call me an idiot. I'm not an idiot. You're the idiot.
You're going to ruin everything.
What are you talking about?
I'm hiding. I'm hiding from a man.
What man?
That man. In the cafe, with the ball hat. You keep honking that horn, and he's going to look over and see me. That's why you're an idiot.
How was I supposed to know that?
Well, now you do.
My name's Gustav, by the way.
My name's Mil.
Where are you from?
I live in Neustadt. I only arrived in Berlin today. My money got stolen on the train. That man's the thief. He took 140 marks out of my pocket while I was asleep. You don't have to believe me, but it's the truth.
I believe you, all right. What are you going to do next?
I don't know.
There's a policeman over there. Why didn't you go and tell him what's going on?
I can't because I'm afraid the police might be after me for something I did in Neustadt. So you see, it's all quite difficult.
But sort of exciting as well. Like a film or something.
Not if I don't get the money back. If I don't get the money back, it'll just be awful.
I could help you if you want.
Really?
I could get my friends to help you too.
That would be wonderful.
I'll go see who I can find.
All right, but don't be long, in case the man in the bowler hat moves on.
He's eating an egg right now, so he can't be leaving just yet.
Mr. Grundeis obliged them both by remaining at the cafe table and even ordering another cup of coffee. 10 minutes later, Emil heard the horn again and looked over his shoulder. Coming down the street towards him were 24 boys, headed by Gustav.
What do you think? Did I get enough people?
More than enough. How did he find everyone so quickly?
I just honked the motor horn. Everyone knew it was me, and they all came running.
That motor horn is brilliant.
See? So listen up, everyone. This is Emil.
Hello.
And that man is a thief who stole all his money.
We'll catch him for you, Emil. Don't doubt it.
This is the professor. Be cool in that, because he's clever.
The first thing we've got to do is see what money we've got.
Each of the boys turned out his pockets and threw all the money he'd got into Emil's cap. One very small boy, who they called Tuesday, had a whole mark and was hopping from one foot to the other with excitement because he was going to do the counting.
We've got 5 marks and 60 pfennigs.
We ought to divide it among 3 of us in case we get separated.
Yeah.
Okay.
Emil, take 2 marks.
Thank you. I'll pay you all back as soon as we've caught the thief.
Gustav, you take 2 marks as well.
All right.
There you are.
And I'll take the remainder.
What happens next?
I need to get rid of my suitcase and these flowers.
I'll take them over to the cafe and leave them at the counter. That way I can get a good look at Bowler Hat at the same time.
All right, and after that, we ought to have a council of war.
But not here where people can see us.
Let's go to Nicholas Square. 2 of us can stay here to keep an eye on Bowler Hat, and we'll have 5 or 6 scouts along the road.
I'll stay here and keep watch and then organise everyone along the street.
Brilliant.
Don't worry, Emil. We won't let him get away.
No. Thank you, guys.
There was a garden in Nicholas Square, and the boys sat down there, some on 2 white benches and the rest on the low iron railing set around a patch of grass. The boy they called the professor took his glasses off and polished them with just the air his father wore when he was going to say something important. His father was a judge.
At some point, we'll probably have to split up, so we need someone to stay near a telephone. Who's on the phone at home? And who's got the most understanding parents?
Me, probably.
Right, Tuesday. Here's a pencil and some paper. Tear up the paper into 20 slips and write your number on each of them.
Okay.
And make sure you write so we can all read it.
Okay.
Then hand them round.
Okay.
And stop saying okay.
Okay.
Tuesday's phone will be our reporting station, and he must be kept informed at all times of what is going on, where everyone is, and what he's doing.
But I won't be at home. I'll be here.
As soon as we finish the planning, you've got to go straight back and sit next to the telephone and not move an inch.
But I want to be there when the thief is caught.
Sorry, Tuesday.
And you might need me, because I'm so small. That could be useful, couldn't it? Also, I can bark like a dog. Ruff, 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 ruff.
Yeah, you'll be more useful sitting by the telephone.
I know it's boring, but it's important too.
A boy called Krum handed round the slips of paper, and each boy tucked his safely in a pocket. One or two, who were very thorough, learn the number by heart at once.
Should we have some people as reserves to fall back on?
Anyone not actually taking part in the chase should stay here in Nicholas Square. And you better take it in turns to go home and say you might be out late. You could even say you're going to stay the night with friends. That could make it a lot easier if we have to keep going till morning. Emil, Gustav, you too, Millers and I, will be on the front line. What else? Peters, you be the messenger.
Okay.
Go home with Tuesday and be ready to go at once to Nicholas Square if we send for you. Got it?
Got it.
Now, we've got our detectives, our reserves, a telephone service and a messenger.
We'll need something to eat.
That's true. All right. Geralt, Frederick, Brunner and Maya, you run home and bring back what you can.
All right. Okay.
This is stupid.
What's the matter, Trout?
You keep talking about food and telephones and everything, but you haven't said a word about how we're actually going to catch the thief.
Professor?
Yes, Peters?
Have you got any stuff for taking fingerprints?
Fingerprints?
That's what the police would do.
We're not the police, though, are we?
Well, how are we going to prove that he did it?
We're not. We'll just have to find a way to steal the money back.
We can't do that.
If we take the money from him, we'll be thieves ourselves.
How can we be thieves if he stole the money from Emil in the first place? If someone steals something from me and then I steal it back, that doesn't make me a thief.
I think it does.
Who cares what you think?
I think the professor's right, you know.
Well, then you're both as stupid as each other.
Why don't you just shut up, Trout?
Why don't you?
Look, we've arranged everything that we can. We can't know just yet how we'll catch him.
You ought to have a revolver.
Oh, yes, you ought to
have a gun. I bet the feed's got one.
We are absolutely not getting a revolver. This business is dangerous enough already.
Who made you in charge anyway?
Why? Do you want to be in charge?
Well, I make a better job of it than you.
You'd make a complete hash of it if you took a gun along. Most probably someone will get shot. They could even die. I don't call that making a good job of it, do you?
Well, let's ask them. Does anyone else think I should take over?
Not really.
No.
Well, then you're all as stupid as each other, and I'm going home.
Scared, are you?
I'm not scared of anything.
All right, all right. Trout, if you're going, just go.
I'm going.
Well, go.
You'll never catch him. You've no chance.
We will catch him. I really think we will.
Quite right, Tuesday.
I ought to send a letter to my grandmother. They'll all be really worried. They might even go to the police. Could anyone take a note for me? They live at 15 Schumannstrasse.
I'll go.
Thanks, Grim.
I'll go by U-Bahn, if someone gives me the money.
Here's enough to get you there and back.
Okay.
Tuesday, could I borrow that pencil?
Here.
Thanks.
Dear Grandma, I expect you're wondering what's happened. I arrived in Berlin, right? But I can't come and see you yet, because I've something very important to do first. The boy who's bringing this letter is a friend and knows where I am, but he mustn't tell you because it has to be a secret at present. Love to all, your loving grandson, Emil. Oh, P.S. Mother sent her love, and I've got a bunch of flowers that I'll bring over as soon as possible.
Emil folded the paper over and wrote the address on the other side.
Okay, give it here. When I get back, I'll ring Tuesday and find out what's happening. Then I'll go and join the reserves.
We need a password so that Tuesday can be sure who we are when we telephone.
Let's make it Emil. That's easy to remember.
Don't forget the password, Emil.
Password, Emil.
It was all so thrilling that Emil began to feel almost pleased that his money had been stolen. Three of the scouts whom Gustav had posted along Troutenau Street now came tearing into Nicholas Square, beckoning frantically to the other detectives.
Come on, Emil!
The professor, Emil and the two Mittlers tore off towards Kaiser Wilhelmstrasse, as if they were trying to break the world record for the 100-metre sprint. They slowed down as they approached the newspaper stand and saw Gustav making signs of them.
We're too late.
Of course not. As if I'd let that happen.
Sorry.
There he is, on the pavement.
Did he look much your way when you were waiting?
Not once. He was too busy eating.
He's hailing a taxi.
Let's hail another one. Taxi! Get in. Come on, move it.
Where are we going?
Can you follow that taxi, please?
Is this a joke?
We've got money.
Please, we mustn't lose that taxi.
We need you to stay near, but not too near.
All right, whatever you say. You're the boss.
Actually, he's the professor.
He's what?
Nothing.
We don't want the man to recognise us, especially me.
They drove for some distance along Mottstrasse, through Victoria Luisa Platz, and then on down Mottstrasse.
Down!
What's the matter?
matter? Traffic light's red.
The two taxis actually stopped, one behind the other, to wait for the lights to turn green. The second one appeared to be empty, for the boys were quite hidden.
It's all right. I think you can get up now.
What's wrong?
I'll whack my head when we brake.
I hope he's not going much further. It's cost us 90 phoenix already.
But very soon after that, the first taxi stopped at the Hotel Kreit in Nollendorf Square. The second taxi braked suddenly and stopped at a safe distance so that they could watch what happened next. The man in the bowler hat got out, paid his driver, and disappeared into the hotel.
Follow him, Gustav.
Will do, Professor.
If the police are two exits, we'll lose him.
How much money do I owe you, sir?
That'll be one mark, son.
The professor led the way through an archway that stood at the side of a cinema and went down an alley into a courtyard which ran behind the cinema and the Lommendorf Theatre, which was next door to it.
Right. The old Mittler, you go and find Gustav.
All right.
Oh, this place will make a great headquarters. There's an U-Bahn station and a restaurant with a phone.
I hope Gustav is all right.
I wish he'd hurry up.
Oh, here he is.
Good news, everyone.
What is it?
Mr. Bowler Hat has taken a room at the hotel. I watched him go up in the lift. There's no other way out.
Is the old Mittler keeping watch?
No, he's gone to buy an ice cream.
What?
Of course he's keeping watch. Duh.
We should telephone Tuesday and tell him what's going on.
I'll do it if you like.
Go on then. There's a phone in that restaurant.
Hello?
Tuesday, is that you?
Speaking. What's the password?
Password, Emil. Gustav here. Bowler Hat has taken a room at Hotel Kreit, Nollendorf Square. We're making our headquarters in the courtyard behind the cinema.
What's the room number?
Don't know yet, but we'll find out.
I wish I was with you.
Has anyone else rung up?
No, no one. It's been really boring.
Sorry, Tuesday.
It was now 8 o'clock, and the professor sent the Mittlers off to Nicholas Square to act as liaison men. The professor, Gustav and Emil sat in the courtyard trying to work out how they could keep tabs on Bowler Hat if he decided to go out again. At this moment, a very new, very shiny bicycle came into the courtyard, with Pony riding it and Krum standing on the step.
Pony!
Hello!
She made me bring her back with me.
I hope that's okay. Everyone, this is my cousin, Pony Heimbolz.
Hi.
You're a fine one, Emil Tischbein. You come to Berlin, and before you even get off the train, you're in the middle of a detective story. I didn't mean for it to happen. It just happened. We were about to go to the station to meet the next train from Neustadt when your friend Krum turned up.
Did they read the notes?
Of course they read the note.
Are they very angry?
Not a bit. Grandma wondered if perhaps you decided to visit the Chancellor.
What?
Well, she can't think what else you could be doing.
Why would I go and see the Chancellor?
I've no idea. Anyway, they don't know that I came here, so I better hurry back, or they'll start to fret about me, too.
All right. Well, thank you very much for coming to see us.
Which one's the professor, by the way?
That'd be me.
I've heard you're the brains behind all of this.
Well, not exactly.
I hope you catch your thief tonight.
Probably be tomorrow now.
Where are you all going to sleep?
Perhaps we won't sleep at all.
I wish I could stay. I'd make you some coffee, but as a girl, I have to be in bed, of course. Oh, hang on a minute. I meant to give you my pocket money. Here it is, 8 groschen. You can buy yourself a cigar if you like.
Thanks, Pony. Thanks very much.
You're welcome. Well, goodbye, everybody. Good night and good luck.
Bye-bye.
She put a friendly hand on her cousin's shoulder and then jumped on her bicycle and rode away. The boys were quite speechless for a few moments after she'd gone. Then the professor murmured,
"Well, well, well."
Just as his father would have done, and the others thought he was quite right. After this, time seemed to pass very slowly.
You know what we should do?
What?
We should have someone inside the hotel.
We've got Krum watching from the street corner.
But he's only got to turn his head away and Grindyce could slip out.
Well, you can't go up to the porter and say you're going to sit on the stairs all night.
But there must be an odd job boy in the hotel, working the lift or something. What if we could find him and tell him what's going on?
That's a good idea. Very good, in fact.
Let me go! We shouldn't risk Emil being recognised.
All right, go and talk to the lift boy. Try and find out what room Grindyce is in.
By this time, it was getting dark, and the illuminated signs began to flash on and off. From a nearby cafe came the strains of dance music, and people were queuing to go into the cinema right round the street. To Emil, it was all strange and tremendously exciting. He almost forgot how he came to be there, and the money which had been stolen.
Berlin is wonderful, but I wouldn't want to live here.
Why's that?
It's so noisy and so big. I think I'd always be getting lost.
You'd get used to the noise, and you'd soon learn your way around.
I suppose I would if I had to.
What's it like in Neustadt?
We have two markets and one station and a river and a park. And that's it.
I could never live in a place that small.
I suppose you get used to that too.
What's your mother like? Is she very strict?
Not at all. She lets me do more or less what I want. But mostly, I don't want to. Do you know what I mean?
Not really.
Well, it's like this. See, is your family rich?
I don't know. They never talk about money.
Then I expect you've got enough of it.
Yes, you're probably right.
My mother and I talk about money a lot because we've got so little. She works really hard, but still, there's never enough. But, like, when there's a school trip or something, she always manages to give me as much to spend as the other boys. Sometimes more.
How can she do that?
I don't know, but she does. Then I always try to bring something back.
Does she ask you to?
No. I just like to do it if I can.
Oh, right. I see.
Sometimes I go out with the other boys, and she says I should stay out, and sometimes I do. But she's always glad when I come back early, even if she doesn't say it.
It's not a bit like that in our house. If I get home early, there's no one at home. I find out they've all gone out to dinner or the theatre or something. It's not that we don't care about each other, it's just we'll go our own way.
I don't want you to think I'm the kind of boy who can't leave his mother's side. It isn't that.
I know.
Good.
They stood under the archway in silence for a while. Night came down. The stars were clear and glittering, and the moon seemed to be watching them.
I expect you and your mother are very fond of each other.
Yes, we are.
Look, isn't that the lift boy coming now?
A boy with a cap on the side of his head paused under the archway and waved to them.
Have you brought us a message from Gustav?
Yes, I have.
Well, what is it?
It's me.
Where on earth did you get the uniform?
Well, I went and found the lift boy, like we said. I told him the whole story from A to Z, and he wanted to help us. He said you got a spare uniform, and I could pretend to be a lift boy if I wanted.
That's fantastic.
I asked him if the porter would mind, and he said the porter was his father, and it would be all right.
Oh, this is excellent.
Also, I could spend the night in an empty room there, and bring one of you with me.
Did you find out which room the thief is in?
What do you think I've been doing all this time?
Which room is he in?
If you'd listen to me, I'll tell you.
I'm sorry, go on.
So the lift boy thought that the thief was in room 61 on the third floor. So I went up there and spied out on the landing. About half an hour later, the door of room 61 opened and Bowler Hat came out. He went to the toilet and as he was coming back, I touched my cap and said, "Will you be wanting anything else, sir?" And he said, "No, nothing." Ask the porter to call me in the morning at 8 sharp. Room 61, don't forget. And I said, "Very good, sir. I won't forget. You'll get a phone call at 8 o'clock precisely." He just nodded and didn't suspect a thing.
This is completely marvellous.
We'll be waiting for him from 8 o'clock onwards.
Well, I must be off. I've got to post a letter for room 12 and I got 50 pfennigs for taking it. It's easy money in this job.
I'm so grateful to you, Gustav. Tomorrow we'll catch the thief and there's nothing to do until then, is there, Professor?
No. Everyone can go home to bed. I'll call Tuesday and he can let the reserves know what the plan is.
Emil, you can sleep in the hotel with me, since you've got no home to go to.
All right, yes. Thank you.
1 hour later, they were all asleep, most of them at home in their own beds, but two in a small room on the fourth floor of the Hotel Kreit.
Good night, Emil.
Good night, Gustav.
And another in his father's study by the telephone. Little Tuesday was still at his post and dreaming of hundreds of phone calls. When his parents came home from the theatre at midnight, they were very surprised to find him there. As his mother carried him up to bed, still sleeping, she heard him murmur drowsily,
"Password, Emil."
The windows of room 61 of the Hotel Kreit looked out onto Nollendorf Square. And the next morning, while Mr. Grundeis was combing his hair, he was a little surprised to see how many children were there. Quite a crowd of boys were playing football on the grass, and others were standing in groups at the corner of the street or outside the U-Bahn. "I suppose it's holiday time," he thought in disgust, as he put on his tie. Meanwhile, in the courtyard behind the cinema, the professor had called a meeting.
Krum! Peters! What the hell are you playing at?
Sorry, Professor.
You dragged half the children of Berlin over here. What's the point in us racking our brains to try and find a quiet way to trap this man?
We'll just have to change our plans. We can't shadow Grundeis' things are. We'll have to hunt him down openly using all the extra forces to help us hem him in.
I agree. We'll have to force him into a corner so that he surrenders.
At this moment, Pony came cycling into the courtyard.
Good morning, everybody. I brought you some breakfast, coffee and rolls and a clean cup tea. Oh no, the handle's come off.
The boys had all eaten a good breakfast already, but no one wanted to hurt Pony's feelings, so they drank the coffee out of the cup without a handle and ate the rolls as though they had not seen food for months.
Lovely bread.
Lovely coffee.
You see the difference it makes when there's a woman around.
How's everything in Schumannstrasse?
All right. Grandma sends her love, but says if you don't come home soon, she'll make you eat fish every day as a punishment.
Ugh. All the boys were very attentive to Pony. The professor held a bicycle. Krum took away the thermos and cup and washed them. The older Mittler screwed up the paper bags which had held the rolls. Emil fastened the basket onto her handlebars again. Meanwhile, Pony danced about the courtyard, singing and chattering.
Do tell me, what on earth are all those kids doing in the square?
They heard we were after a thief, so they're hanging about to join in.
At that moment, Gustav dashed into the courtyard.
Come on, he's on his way!
Let's go!
Don't forget, we have a plan. We're going to surround him. There'll be further orders as necessary. Uh-huh. Let's go!
The man in the bowler hat came out of the door of the hotel, strolled slowly down the steps to the street, and turned right. The professor, Emil and Gustav, sent messengers back and forth among the children with instructions, and very soon Mr. Grundeis found himself completely surrounded. Some of them stared so hard that he hardly knew where to look.
Just look at his face. Keep in front of me. I don't want him to get recognised.
Mr. Grundeis was quite clearly getting nervous. He suspected vaguely that he was in danger from this mob of children. He tried taking tremendously long strides, but that didn't help. He stopped in his tracks, turned round and started back the way he'd come. But that didn't help either. He was hemmed in as closely as before. Then Krum got right in front of him and tripped him up.
How do you think you're doing? Be careful where you put your feet, you little idiot.
Sorry, sir.
Get out of my way or I shall call the police.
Oh, please do call the police, sir.
Well, you were hoping that you would.
You don't actually have the slightest intention of calling them, do you?
Get out of my way, you horrible children. Children should be seen and not heard. Actually, I don't think they should be seen either.
People were beginning to stare. Shop assistants were coming out onto the pavement just to see what was going on. Then the sight of a small branch bank ahead gave Mr. Grundeis an idea. He broke through the ranks of children with a mad dash and ran inside the building.
Gustav and I will go in after him. Emil, you stay outside till you hear Gustav's motorhome.
Yes, all right.
Then come inside and bring about 10 boys with you.
Will do.
Come on, Gustav.
Gustav and the professor hurried across the road and into the bank. Emil was so excited, he could hardly breathe.
Right. Krum, Geralt, the two Mittlers, who else? Peters, yes, and you four. You lot are coming with me when we hear from Gustav.
Things are getting pretty lively, aren't they?
You stay out of the bank, Pony.
But I want to come with you.
And what will Grandma say if she heard I put you in danger?
Inside the bank, Gustav and the professor saw the man with the bowler hat standing at the counter in a frantic hurry to be attended to. But the cashier was talking on the telephone.
Madam. No, madam.
When at last the cashier came over, she asked the professor what he wanted.
Yes, sir?
Oh, this gentleman here was before me.
Oh, sorry.
Thank you, young man.
My pleasure.
What can I do for you, sir?
I'd like some change, please.
Certainly, sir.
Would you give me 5 twenties for this 100 rice mark note? And 40 marks worth of silver.
He handed across the counter 100 Reichsmark note and 2 twenties.
Wait a moment.
That money's stolen.
What?
That money doesn't belong to this gentleman. He stole it from a friend of mine, and he only wants change to get rid of the notes.
Oh, fantastic impertinence. Excuse me a moment, madam.
Mr. Grundyce then raised his hand and gave the professor a stinging slap on the face. The professor responded by punching Mr. Grundyce very hard. Oh! So hard that he had to hold onto the counter to stop himself falling over.
That showed him. Brilliant work, professor.
Thank you.
Then Gustav honked loudly 3 times on his horn. The bank clerks all got to their feet and came over to see what was happening. And the manager stormed out of his office just as 10 boys, led by Emil, burst through the doors.
What on earth is going on in here?
There's quite a story to it, sir.
Where have all these children come from?
These little delinquents have the nerve to accuse me of stealing this money. This money that I simply came in here to change.
He stole that money from me yesterday afternoon. Yeah. 100 Reichsmark note and 2 twenties. We were on the train from Neustadt to Berlin and I fell asleep.
Is that true?
Of course it's not true.
What?
Young man, can you prove any of this?
The boy is lying through his teeth. I've been in Berlin all week. I was busy in the city all day yesterday from morning till night.
It's not true. That's a lie.
Yeah.
Can you prove that this gentleman travelled in the train with you?
Of course he can't, because I wasn't there.
If he was alone in the train with him, of course there wouldn't be any witnesses.
Oh, but I can produce a witness, though. Mrs. Yacka from Gross Grinnell, she was in the compartment when I got in, though she got out quite soon afterwards. She asked me to remember her to Mr. Kurt's house in Neustadt, where I live.
Then, sir, I must ask you to provide an alibi.
Can you do that? I am staying at the Hotel Kreit across the road. They can vouch for me there.
No, they can't, because you've only been there since yesterday evening.
Yeah.
I know. I've been disguised as a lift boy almost ever since you took the room.
At that, a smile seemed to pass over the faces of the bank clerks. They were beginning to be on the side of the boys.
Well, sir, I'm afraid we shall have to keep the money here for the time being, Mr. What is your name, please?
His name is Grundyce.
My name is Müller. See, they can't even get my name right.
On the train, he told me that he was called Grundyce.
Sir, have you got any papers to prove who you are?
Not with me, unfortunately, but if you can wait a minute, I shall fetch them from my hotel.
If you let him leave now, none of us will ever see him again. It is my money.
It is.
Even if what you say is true, how can you prove that it really is your money? Did you make a note of the numbers or write your name on the back of the notes?
No, because I never dreamed of it being stolen.
Did you happen to notice if any of the notes were marked or damaged in any way?
No, I'm afraid not.
Gentlemen, I give you my word of honour that the money is mine. Do I look like the kind of person who would steal from a child?
But that's exactly what you did.
Young man, without any proof that the money is yours, there's nothing whatsoever we can do.
But do you believe me?
I believe you.
This is outrageous.
Whether we believe the accusation or not is neither here nor there. Without any proof, we shall have to let this matter drop.
What a shame.
Just give me my change, will you?
Give him his change.
Yes, sir. Can you wait a moment? Mr. Müller,
is yes, it? But hurry up, woman. I haven't got all day.
Everyone, I'm sorry, but I shall have to ask you to leave now.
Yes, of course. We understand.
All the bank clerks looked on helplessly. As Emil turned to leave, his eyes filled with tears. To have come this far and fail now, felt unbearable. And then...
Hang on a minute.
I've thought of something.
Another lie, is it?
Let the boy speak, please, sir.
When I was on the train, I pinned the envelope with the money to the inside of my pocket.
Oh, yes.
So there ought to be holes pricked through all three notes.
This is quite ridiculous. Give me my money back and I'll go and change it elsewhere.
The boy is right. There are pin pricks through all three notes.
And here's the pin that made them.
Emil laid the pin triumphantly on the counter, and the thief turned round quick as lightning. He shoved his way through the boy so violently that several stumbled and fell over. Then he bolted through the door and was gone.
After him!
Everyone made for the door, but when they got outside, they saw that the thief had been stopped by more children. They held onto his arms and his legs and his coat. He struggled wildly to free himself, but there were just too many children.
We have reason to believe that this man is a thief.
Yeah! Yeah! This is preposterous.
Don't make a fuss, sir. Come along with me.
Yeah!
All of the boys were happy to accompany the policeman and Mr. Grundyce to the station and ensure that he couldn't get away. After this, things got sorted out very quickly. Emil had to make a statement. They gave him his money back and he was free to leave. Emil's grandmother was extremely happy to see him.
Well, if it isn't the famous Emil Tischbein.
Don't squeeze him to death, Mother.
Hello, Emil.
Sit down, Emil, sit down. Are you hungry? Are you tired? Let me look at you, let me look at you.
Your grandmother hasn't slept a wink.
How could I?
I'm sorry I worried you so much.
I kept thinking, what can it be? What on earth can be happening? And what will I tell your mother? Your mother, imagine her horror if we said we'd lost you. Oh, and every time I thought of calling the police, I stopped myself. Something in me said I had to trust you.
I did tell her you were safe. I was very careful not to do anything too dangerous, Grandma. These flowers are for you, Aunt Martha. Oh,
thank you, Emil.
Oh, and here's the money, of course. Mother sent her love and says you mustn't be cross that she hasn't sent you anything. Oh. But business wasn't very good. She sent a little more than usual to make up for it.
Thank you, my dear boy. And here, you must have a 20 back for being such a good detective.
Oh, no, I can't take it. I really can't. I've still got 20 marks that monk gave me for myself.
You do what your grandmother tells you. Put the money in your pocket and we'll say no more about it.
But I can't. I brought that money for you.
For goodness sake, Emil, take the money or I will.
Take the money, Emil. It will make your grandmother happy.
Thank you, Grandma. Thank you very much.
Now, let's eat. Lay the table, please, Pony.
Guess what we're having for lunch?
I've no idea.
What do you like best in all the world?
Macaroni cheese with ham!
Oh, that's exactly what we're having.
Halfway through lunch, there was a ring at the door.
I'll get it.
Hello. I'm a journalist, and I'm looking for Emil Tischbein.
Emil! It's a journalist and he's looking for you.
All right, Pony, there's no need to shout. Please come in.
Oh, I'm sorry. You're eating.
Oh, no, we're nearly finished. Come in, come in. This is my nephew, Emil Tischbein.
Well, I'm very glad to meet you, Emil. My name is Eric Kestner.
Pleased to meet you, Mr. Kestner.
Won't you sit down?
Oh, thank you.
You don't remember me, do you?
I can't say that I do.
You paid my fare yesterday on a number 177 tram because I hadn't any money.
Was that you? It was you! Of course it was. And you asked for my address so you could pay me back.
Yes. I'll just go and fetch you the money.
No. That's quite all right. That's not why I came here.
Oh.
I'd like to interview you, please.
You want to interview me?
Is Emil going to be in the newspaper?
Emil is going to be on the front page.
Emil told me briefly what had happened, and I wrote some things down in my notebook because, of course, I was the journalist, and that's why I'm telling you this story now.
Now, I have some great news for you, Emil.
What news?
It's like this. The thief who was arrested this morning has been identified as the man who robbed a big bank in Hanover last month. The police have been searching for him for some time.
Really?
No.
Good gracious.
A fortnight ago, the bank offered a reward for capturing the thief. You caught him, Emil. so the reward is yours. The superintendent asked me to give you his kind regards and to tell you he's very glad to see your courage rewarded in this way. 100, 200, 300, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 900.
Goodness gracious!
1,000 exactly.
A 1,000 marks, all for a meal.
I can hardly believe it. I can hardly believe it.
Now we can buy all the other boys for tea.
Yes. Yes, let's do that. But first of all, can we pay for Mother to come to Berlin?
That very same afternoon, Mrs. Tischbein was on the train from Neustadt to Berlin. She was very nervous and restless and kept looking round the compartment. The train seemed to go so slowly that she wanted to get out and push it. Opposite her sat a man reading an evening newspaper, and suddenly she noticed what was on the front page.
Whatever is the matter?
That's Emile! That's Emile!
What's Emile?
On the front page, the photograph. That boy is my son.
Really? How extraordinary!
Feet of boy detective. 100 Berlin children chase thief. Oh, my! Oh, my goodness!
Please allow me to congratulate you.
Oh, my goodness!
Are you all right?
Oh, it's just a shock, seeing him like that. I had no idea.
Here, madam, take the paper.
Oh, thank you, yes. Emil Tischbein from Neustadt.
Mrs. Tischbein grew quite pale as she read the whole story. The paper shook in her hands as though she was sitting in a high wind. But in fact, both windows were tight shut.
Oh, anything could have happened to him. Oh, it makes my heart leap into my mouth.
But he's safe now.
I warned him to take care of that money.
But don't you think it was remarkable the way those boys managed everything?
To be honest, I can't quite take it in.
Well, I think it was a magnificent effort. Simply magnificent.
Emil is a clever boy. He's always top of his class. But when I think about what might have gone wrong...
Is the photograph like him?
Yes, very. Do you think he's nice looking?
I do indeed.
Oh, his jacket's creased. I'm always telling him to unbutton it before he sits down, but he never remembers.
Well, if that's his worst fault...
Oh, I can't wait to see him and to hold him.
Well, keep the paper, if you like. I'm getting off in a moment.
Oh, thank you.
Mrs. Tischbein read the story of Emil's adventures over and over again until the train reached Friedrichstrasse station.
Mother!
Emil! Oh, thank goodness you're safe. Thank goodness, thank goodness, thank goodness. I never want to let go of you again.
Mother, you're hugging me too hard.
Oh, sorry.
That's all right.
Oh, let me look at you. Oh, I'm so very glad to see you.
Me too.
Are you sure you're all right, Emil?
Quite sure.
When I read about what happened, I kept thinking, imagine if you'd been hurt.
But I wasn't hurt.
You're very dear to me, Emil. More dear than anyone else in the world.
I know. It's the same for me.
If I lost you...
Most of the time, I wasn't in any danger at all. Because there were all these people helping me.
Oh.
You must meet some of the other boys, Mother.
Oh, I'd like to. I'd like to thank them.
They're at Aunt Martha's right now, eating apple cake.
And Emil took Mrs. Tischbein by the hand and they walked down the street together. There was Gustav, the professor, Krumm, the Mittlers, Geralt, Little Tuesday, and several others. There were hardly chairs for them all, and Pony was running from one to another with a huge pot of chocolate. And Aunt Martha's apple cake was a dream.
Hello, everyone. I'd like you to meet my mother.
Oh, hi, Mrs. Tischbein.
Would you like a cup of tea?
Oh, I would love a cup of tea.
Come here, my darling.
Come here.
Hello, Mother.
It's so wonderful to have you here.
Oh, it's wonderful to be here.
Oh, sit down, my darling. Sit down.
Then Grandma wrapped her spoon on her gold-rimmed teacup and said...
Listen to me, boys. There's something I want to say. No, I'm not going to tell you how clever you are. You've had quite enough of that from other people. No, I'd like to talk about someone else for a moment. There was one of you who would have simply loved to go chasing after Mr. Grundeis, but he promised to stay at home, and he did so because he promised. Yes, Little Tuesday. He sat indoors by the telephone for 2 whole days because it was his duty. And there wasn't much fun in that, but I call it a really fine example. I'd like to see you all stand up and give 3 cheers for Tuesday.
3 cheers for Tuesday. Hip, hip.
Hooray!
Hip, hip.
Hooray!
Hip, hip.
Hooray!
Hooray! Tuesday! Hey! Thank you very much, but it was nothing really. But
Thank you very, very much.
Yeah. Yeah. Who wants more chocolate?
Me!
It was late in the afternoon when the party was over. Before the boys left, Emil promised to take Pony to tea with the professor the next afternoon. Soon afterwards, Mr. Heimbold came home, and they had supper. When it was over, he fetched the money out of his cash box and gave it to Mrs. Tischbein.
If I were you, I would put it safely in the bank.
That's just what I mean to do.
But I want to get Mother an electric dryer and a coat with a fur collar. Oh.
Emil, your mother must decide what to do with the money.
He only wants to give his mother a present.
Of course your mother can have the dryer and the coat, Emil. You let the rest of it go into the bank, won't you?
Of course.
But you must get something for yourself, Emil. Why don't you get a bicycle, then you can't smash up mine.
Have you broken Pony's bicycle, Emil?
No, she's just saying that.
He could easily smash it up because he can't ride it properly.
Well, I haven't had as much practice as
you. Which is why you should get your own and not smash up mine.
Oh, right, you two, that's enough. Emil can do whatever he likes. He doesn't have to listen to Pony.
Later on, Mr. Heimbold took the dog out for a walk. As a matter of fact, the Heimbolds didn't have a dog, but that's what he always said when he went out for a glass of beer in the evening. Grandma, Emil and Pony and their mothers went over all the exciting events of the last 2 days.
Well, it's taught me never to trust a stranger.
But Gustav and the professor and everyone else were strangers before yesterday, and look how wonderful they were.
Well, then I should say this, that it's taught me never to trust someone who makes you feel nervous.
It's shown me that children should never be allowed to travel alone.
Nonsense, dear, you're quite wrong there. This was just unfortunate, but actually it turned out all right in the end.
Don't you think there's anything to be learned from all this?
Well, I can only think of one thing.
What is it?
That money should always be sent in the post.
In Emil and the Detectives by Eric Kestner, dramatised for radio by Katie Hymns, Emil was played by Joshua Swinney, Kestner by Bruce Alexander, and Grundeis by Ewan Hooper. Gustav was Daniel Cooper, the Professor, Neil Reynolds, and Tuesday, Harry Child. Trout was Bertie Gilbert, Peters, Josh Robinson, and Pony, Agnes Bateman. Other parts were played by Melissa Advani, Tessa Nicholson, John Biggins, Rhys Jennings, Joseph Cohen Cole, and Katie Layden. And Emil and the Detectives was directed by Jessica Dromgoole.